We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Alrighty, guys, welcome back to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. I am, of course, Matt Harvey. Now, long-time listeners may have noticed that it was a bit of a gap in the schedule, yes? I took a break at the start of the year to do my civic duty and get COVID. Yes, I let it rip all over my lungs and throat and insides so I can do my part to protect the economy. Have you done your part to protect the economy? Get COVID today. Getting COVID now is especially patriotic as the isolation payments have been reduced and you'll be not working for even less money so the economy can be safer for longer. Never mind that economic conditions are worse than they were during the pandemic. You are all heroes who, like so many before you, will do what it takes to make sure the economy is safe. Now get out there and spend some money on a megaphone so that you can attend a protest and infect others, allowing them to also do their civic duty by letting COVID rip through their system. COVID, give it a go. If you have a COVID, you get a COVID. Just a little shout out before we get going. Listen out for me as I do a guest spot on The Chaser Report, The Chaser's daily podcast coming up sometime soon. I don't know exactly when. And I have live shows in Adelaide and Melbourne. They are on sale now. And for you guys, my listeners, just please use the word podcast to save 25% off on full price tickets for the guys in Adelaide. And I will be organising some stuff for the Melbourne Melbourne Comedy Festival. Just haven't done it yet. Adelaide has been the priority right now because it's happening pretty soon. But please, yeah, get out and check out the live shows. My show is called Wage Against the Machine. It is an anti-work comedy where I will be spilling the tea on some of my old jobs, telling some stories from when I used to work. I will talk about robo-debt, I'll talk about wage theft, and just tell a couple of fun stories. It's a satirical and social commentary show, so if you enjoy this podcast, you will definitely enjoy the material that is in the show. So please book some tickets and come and check it out. I think it's going to be a good time to come out and see some live comedy. And I am now negative from COVID, so I'm all safe to be in the room with. But for now, I will be the bearer of weird news. Let's get into the headlines. A professor in Japan has created a prototype TV screen that generates flavors when you lick it. The professor has been working to allow people the experience of eating at a restaurant on the other side of the world. And he's really got it licked. Gwyneth Paltrow is reported to be keen to get the technology for her lifestyle brand Goop, naming the product, "This TV Tastes Like My Vagina." Workers at London stockbrokers FinCap will have access to unlimited paid holidays from this year to try to prevent staff burnout. Politicians all over the country are asking, so wait, you have to show up and do your job, like, all the time? Weird. Norway's data privacy watchdog is fining the dating app Grindr $7.16 million for sending sensitive personal data to hundreds of potential advertising partners without users' consent. Initially, Grindr sent the data with the message, "Ooh, if you like that, I got a bunch more like it." But once the exchange turned to talk of fines, they had a very different attitude. They called Norway a tease and said that that's why they downloaded the cult. Two papers published this year in Nature Food find that food, especially beef, creates more GHGs than previously thought, sparking a talk that foregoing steaks may be one of the most efficient ways to reduce your carbon footprint, and that maybe we should treat beef like coal. Upon hearing this, Sky News' opinion readers started prepping segments on how wokeness is trying to cancel cows, how latte lefties hate farmers and Scott Morrison is desperately sourcing a cow to bring into Parliament when they sit at one of the 10 days that they'll be sitting this year. Be like, don't be afraid, don't be afraid, this is a cow, this is a cow. In an attempt to distance themselves from J.K. Rowling after her recent anti-trans statements, US Quidditch, so USQ, and Major League Quidditch, MLQ, said that they would now decide on new names for the game, in a move that is bound to make Rowling even more furious, as they will be self-identifying as something different from what they came into the world to, because they feel it more closely matches who they truly are. And she is not going to like that. Possible alternative options put forward by USQ include Quickball, Quicker, Quidstrike, and Quadraball, but they seem to have missed the obvious rebrand, Quixotic Nerds, which they'll love because it's just isolating enough to turn somebody off, like running through a field with a broom between your legs. This is one sport that curlers look at and think, well, at least we're cooler than them. As a result of the ongoing global chip shortage, manufacturer Canon is scrambling to appease a wave of furious customers after its own ink cartridges are malfunctioning and being read as fake. Canon did apologise though, saying the rollout of its instant replace ink cartridges was intended to go unnoticed for at least 6 months before becoming standard. A British surgeon who branded his initials on patients' livers has been struck off the medical register, and good. The UK has done a lot of stupid things recently. It's just good to see them coming around, I think. You know, we were worried about you there, UK. Like, things haven't been that good for the last 300 or 400 years. You doing okay? Australia has equaled its hottest day on record after a remote coastal town, the town of Onslow in Western Australia, reported temperatures of 50.7 degrees Celsius. But officials don't want us to worry because the $1.5 billion Valiara coal mine in central Queensland should help balance things out by making it even hotter in the eastern part of the country, overshadowing the record. So don't worry about it. You'll be fine. Anti-vax leader Christopher Key, who calls himself the vaccine police, is now telling his followers to drink their own urine in order to cure themselves of COVID-19. In a video posted on his Telegram account, Key said, "The antidote that we have seen now, and we have tons and tons of research, is urine therapy." Okay, and I know, guys, I know to a lot of you this sounds crazy, but God's given us everything we need. Wow. He then turned to his friend and said, "Hey, I think they're about to actually drink their own urine. What should we do next?" They won't eat their own poop, will they? Well, only one way to find out. And he stroked his beard and laughed maniacally. Personal responsibility hits new heights as UK supermarket chain Morrison's is set to scrap use-by dates from milk packaging in favour of encouraging people to use the sniff test to discourage food wastage. To increase the loss of wasted food, they'll also be increasing the 5-second rule to the 5-hour rule. So it should be all good. Dog training company Mad Dogs and Englishmen have been contracted to maintain anti-seagull patrols at the Sydney Opera House for more than 4 years using 12 specially trained border collies and kelpies. The patrols were a success when people realised that if you roll out dogs, people will just about be too distracted to notice anything going on around them. That's why the police and the airport security actually hire dogs. It's not that they're good at sniffing things. They're just excellent distractions. "Hey, have a look here, officer. Don't look at the atrocities happening over here. He's such a good boy, isn't he? Aren't you, officer? Don't look at the atrocities happening over here." He just hangs out with a bad crowd, you know what I mean? Just some bad apples. It's not his fault. Pope Francis used his New Year's message to issue a call for an end to violence against women, saying it was insulting to God. In only 2,000 short years, the church has really made some progress. Now the kids of 40-22 will be able to rest easy knowing that is how quickly a call to the end of sexual assaults against them will take. really is a relief. Yahoo Japan told its 8,000 employees they can do their jobs from anywhere in the country and that they'll pay for flights to the office if they ever need to come in. In exchange, all they'll have to do is never use Google again. Seems like a fair trade-off. Facebook has delayed a return to its office until March, saying the pushback of the return to office dates gives employees more flexibility regarding their work arrangements amid the lingering effects of the pandemic and gives Facebook a more decentralized location from which they can claim that their office is so that they can really stretch out those taxes, just spread them all over the country. A new version of Fight Club has dropped on streaming platform Tencent Video, which includes a different ending. In the new ending, the narrator still kills off Tyler Durden, but the exploding building scene is replaced with a black screen and the words, "The police rapidly figured out the whole plan and arrested all criminals, successfully preventing the bomb from exploding." People are outraged that anyone in China would have the audacity to modify an American film to appease the Chinese government. That's normally the job of Hollywood executives. I mean, you're going to put all these guys out of work. America really finds it hard to believe that anyone would modify the end of one of their films rather than just remake the entire thing and infuse it from top to tail with American values and accents and ideas. Because that's the American way. Really got to get on top of it. Squish any sort of global influence or ideas. The Labour Party has announced that if they win the next federal election, they will introduce a minister for scam busting to lead the fight to stop Australians being ripped off billions of dollars each year. The scam busting unit would be called the Federal ICAC and would have a heavy focus on ministerial spending. External global scam enabling company Western Union estimates that Australia is among the top 5 countries in the world for being scammed. And they know as they collected all the letters. Sky News has already started prepping stories about how the Labour Party hates small business owners by putting this niche industry out of work forever. Labour's Shadow Minister for Financial Services, Stephen Jones, would likely take on the scam-busting portfolio, saying there was an urgent need for a minister to tackle the issue. $33 billion last year was lost through scams and online fraud, and we just don't have a strategy. And that was just through false JobKeeper claims. We also have an abundance of crypto scams that need addressing, and all of those email ones about naked masturbation tapes. Like, there's just so many lined up behind them. But that's the headlines for today. Let's get to the big news. First up, it's totally not a festival because we said God and we meant it news. Hillsong, the little church that wants to so very badly, has helped further cement its status as an actual church and not just an over-budget blue light disco for boring kids who never learned to let themselves go. By avoiding a fine over singing and dancing at Hunter Youth Camp amid music festival-like cancellations, despite the state's health minister saying the event was clearly in breach of both the spirit and intent of the public health orders. New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet said he was incredibly disappointed that Hillsong can't keep its fuck-up secret, and that if they really wanted to be considered a real and true proper church, it's going to have to learn to keep a lid on things a lot longer than less time than it takes to finish the event in question. Your more classic churches have managed to keep a lid on some of their secrets for thousands of years. I mean, we only just found out about the time that Thor gentrified an entire neighbourhood on the outskirts of Valhalla so that he could bring his buddies in on the cheap. Then there was the time that Ganesh, the remover of objects, removed a few obstacles for his buddies from a university so that they could get sweet positions in the House of the Pantheon. And Zeus is constantly being me-tooed by one family or another after taking the form of a horny duck and causing ducks to sue the Greek pantheon for defamation. These are real churches. In light of the lack of punishment, music and arts festivals have decided to become places of worship as artists continue to believe in the existence of an arts industry despite the distinct lack of evidence. Putting on a festival show at the moment is a bigger act of faith than putting on a music festival-like event that focuses on the big JC, magician and part-time carpenter. Though Hillsong maintains that this event was focused on the Lord and its saviour did have a distinct remix of the whole prayer and worship vibe as members were seen dancing to Turn Down For What by noted Christian rapper Little John.
What?
The church maintains that members need to sing and dance or they'll realise that they're actually just a church and might do something a little more age appropriate that will bring them the feeling of being a god. Like succeeding at the milk crate challenge on TikTok. Centrelink contract news now. Infosys, India's number two software services exporter, has landed a further $71.6 million for its work on the country's new Centrelink payments calculation engine after the 14-month-long initial build phase wrapped up last year. The contract, posted publicly late last month, brings the total value of the overhaul to at least $135.4 million since Infosys beat IBM and Accenture to the original deal. Now, I am unsure who would be better for the Australian people when it comes to the next version of Centrelink's payment system. Infosys has a bit of a complicated history with scandals and controversies, but then coming from India, this is almost expected. It is the national pastime to get caught up in some sort of controversy. With an accusation of being anti-national by pro-Modi members of the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, which, according to the Times of India, is the ideological parent of Modi's ruling party in 2021 for failing to resolve glitches in the income tax website it manages. This puts us in a true conflict, as Scott Morrison has in fact called Modi a great friend, and they have both used their time in power to abuse their position and allow authorities to use terrorist hunting powers on individuals. But Morrison certainly wouldn't want a company to be anti-national and turn against the government, even with his mentality that the government can't do anything and the business sector should do everything, that business sectors should still be pro-government. Further complicating matters is that Infosys was brought into the spotlight by an anonymous whistleblower group, and the Australian government is very anti-whistleblowers. The group, called Ethical Employees, again, a problem for the coalition who need more flexible morals when they are doing business. Now, Ethical Employees alleged Chief Financial Officer Nilanjan Roy of unethical practices to boost short-term revenue and profit, which must have ultimately brought the Morrison government around on the matter, as they have built their clear ethical standards on the solid ground of the shifting truths of unethical practices. And that's the kind of stuff that the coalition just eats up. They love a good shifting truth of unethical practice. The contract covers a 45-week period between November 2021 and September 2022, meaning Infosys will be paid close to $1.6 million a week, or around $6.4 million each month for the work, which, at the terrible rates we pay people on Centrelink, could have covered a year's worth of pay for 426 welfare slackers instead of just installing this terrible system. But hey, these welfare slackers, they've got nothing to give the Morrison government, so why not just burn the money? Put it in a big stinking pile and burn it all down. Moving on to art news. An art-making robot was detained by border agents on her way to display art at the first contemporary art show ever staged at the Great Pyramid of Giza because Egyptian customs officials thought she was a spy. The border agents kept the robot artist and Inspector Gadget with an arts degree, Ada, in a... Border agents kept the robot artist and Inspector Gadget with an arts degree, Ada, in custody for 10 days and debated removing her eyes, which have built-in cameras. Well, when all you have is decades of crippling political paranoia, everything looks like a nail. Other potential spies they caught on the way in through the airport were a bag of chips who had a suspicious gait and nervous eyes going through airport security, a microscope that they suspected of turning into an 8-foot robot, and a bunch of bananas that were overheard talking shit about the government. I'm generally not one for siding with border guards, but Ada is an artist who has now had an anti-government encounter. This will fuel a striking series of self-portraits of herself in captivity and spark civil unrest among populations of busybody do-gooders. Ada's creator said that people fear robots. I understand that, but the whole situation is ironic because the goal of Ada was to highlight and warn of the abuse of technological development, and she's being held because she is technology. Adding, Ada would appreciate that irony, I think. Already, Ada has entered a crucial period of her journey as an artist, claiming she understands and enjoys irony rather than just claiming that any old thing that seems contradictory is ironic, like the rest of us. So already, she thinks she's better than us. Given she is named in honor of the pioneering computer programmer Ada Lovelace, and she was created by computer programmers working with experts in both art and robotics, as well as psychologists, this is the computer equivalent of nepotism and getting a $1 million loan from a family member to start a business, then not paying it back. Opening doors for her shown work in London at the Design Museum and the Victoria and the Albert Museum, meaning she never really had any hardship herself, like we like to pretend artists need in order to be good. Following diplomatic negotiations, she was allowed to keep her ocular cameras. I can't take her eyes out. They're too integral to making her art, her creator told the London Times. Going on to add the less pertinent but no less true statement, she would also look weird without them. Which, yeah, she would look weird without them, but that's, you can put them back in. She's a robot. Which I think is giving too little faith to our robot friend. Because, I mean, if Frida Kahlo can make a statement piece about one eyebrow, Ada can definitely make one or no eyes work. I mean, she's going to be an artist after all. She's got to start somewhere. An iconic Spider-Man panel has sold for a record amount at auction, with the image of the first time the black suit Spider-Man appeared selling for $3.4 million. Comics and comic panels considered to represent important moments in comic history have previously sold for record values in the past, with Superman's first appearance in Action Comics number 1 being the previous record holder. Upcoming iconic scenes sure to break records at auction are Spider-Man's sperm killing his long-term wife Mary Jane, that time Spider-Man misunderstood Japanese citizens who were rounded up for internment camps, the time Captain America threw his shield and it made the sound WAKE, and the original print of Batman's dick. I look forward to the auction on that one. Two tech executives are opening a new museum dedicated to NFTs in Seattle, providing a physical home for a famously digital art form. This museum, the art world equivalent of a brick-and-mortar Amazon store, the Seattle NFT Museum, the SNFTM, boasts 30 custom design screens to display digital art and other collectibles. Nowhere on earth is there a bigger collection of digital art except on Imgur. The Seattle Money Laundering Museum, the Seattle NFT Museum, is keen to fill the gap in the market previously held by market leader Bitcoin before the early investors got too pushy and it all basically turned into Avon. Programming will rotate, save for one permanent presentation, an exhibition that introduces the concept of NFTs and their potential. The permanent exhibition is titled, See, It Wasn't a Waste of Money, Sharon, and is designed to convince the easily fooled into parting way with their money. With the world's focus on coal and the reduction of emissions by 2050, coal companies are looking to invest in potentially high-yield source of finance that will damage the environment and have so shown heavy interest in an NFT museum. The tech executives have shown great interest in centralizing the famously decentralized art form so that they can prove to other art sellers that they are also confused by the world of high-stakes art sales and are just making it up as they go, but also have the added skill of not understanding NFTs. It's a good time for everybody. Speaking of keeping illegitimate gains, a new strategy for the wealthy to donate art and get a tax break is being tested by the financially abundant to help them dodge proposed new changes in taxes in Washington, which might not even get up and end up staying around. They proposed fractional ownership of art. They'd be donating a portion of an artwork and sharing custody with a museum. Good thing M.C. Escher's Relativity already resides in a museum collection, as it really loses impact if you can only see part of what it is trying to show you. That's it? One set of stairs? What's so confusing about that? I had really high hopes for this one particular piece. I'm very disappointed. Maybe when the upper fractions come in, it'll make more sense. This is ostensibly the world's most pretentious custody arrangement. So I can see Enlightenment and Joy Mondays and every other weekend, and the public can spend time with Joy and Enlightenment the rest of the time. I think that sounds fair. Wikipedia editors have voted not to classify NFTs as art, sparking outrage in the crypto community and prompting the never-ending quest for a definition of art here at the Bearer of Weird News. According to the crypto news outlet and front-running contender for the worst magazine name, Cointelegraph, with editors of the page dedicated to the most expensive art sales by living artists, questioned whether examples such as the $69 million sale of Beeple's Every Days or PAC's $91.8 million NFT merge should make the list. Because like most major art sales, they're likely being used to launder some dirty money and reduce a tax commitment, like all of the best art. The conversation, like any good debate held about the internet, quickly turned towards semantics. Weird that a debate between people who make small changes to internet pages for a living would quickly turn to semantics, but hey, whatever works for you guys. As is apparently common for classification disputes on the online encyclopedia, the question was put to a vote. 5 out of 6 editors voted not to include NFTs on the list, and the list has not been updated at the time of recording. The 6th one owned some NFTs and was really keen to get that to get their price values way higher. Debaters wondered whether NFTs constituted tokens or if they represented artworks themselves. And as much as I both hate to disagree with Wikipedia's best and most pedantic, and as frustrating as it is to agree with anyone who seriously invests in NFTs, we here at the Bearer of Weird News have to disagree with this hottest of takes. NFTs are definitely art, but they aren't art in the way that NFT grifters want you to think of them as art. They aren't individual, unique images lovingly created by the artists, but instead, they are each a part of an elaborate performance art piece which is more like a lazy recreation of a psychological experiment where if enough people all tell you that NFTs are a thing and are valuable, then they hope that you'll break and start agreeing that it's all real and it's all worth something. NFTs really are something and worth anything. And I'm all for grifting and gaslighting the rich and bored into parting with their excess money and giving it to artists. But when these grifters try to grift the poor with the promise of fast wealth, then I am for the power of pedantry to turn their grift into useless digital waste. And if you can't force your way into the art scene, like a urinal presenting as a sculpture, you don't belong in a high-stakes world of claiming random things are art. That is the end. And our final art news comes in the form of rap news. Rap music, corrupting your children since the 1990s. Rap has become the focus of an interesting legal battle as rappers Jay-Z, Meek Mill, Kelly Rowland, and Killer Mike are among the names arguing for a change in New York law that would prevent rap lyrics being used as evidence in criminal trials. Long-term listeners may remember that in 2021, the state of Maryland's highest court ruled that rap lyrics may be administered in court as evidence of a defendant's guilt. After Lawrence Montague was indicted for murder because 3 weeks before trial, Montague used a jailhouse telephone to record a rap verse, which the state of Maryland introduced as evidence of Montague's guilt, leading to Montague being convicted and sentenced to a combined 50 years for second-degree murder and the use of a firearm in a crime of violence and being overtly braggadocious in a crime of lyrics. They've also forced rapper 6ix9ine to confess his persona was merely empty bragging in court, which is actually a worse crime in rap scenes than anything that he could have been charged with. The vocalists have signed a letter urging the lawmakers in New York State to back the proposed change and uphold freedom of expression, which puts conservative pundits in a real tight bind, as freedom of expression is their favourite way to defend racism, and by not allowing it, they can also hurt their favourite cause, racism. The legislation titled Rap Music on Trial has passed an initial stage in the state Senate. In a study of 30 judgments between 2005 and 2020, London School of Economics law professor Abina Owusu-Bempa found that prosecutors can use lyrics and videos to tell a story of a dangerous rapper that reflects long-standing stereotypes about black males as criminals. She said that rap music is usually presented in court as bad character evidence, but has also been used as direct evidence. This presents a real hornet's nest for Fox News hosts and Alex Jones types, who have, over the years, financially benefited from the use of such lyrics to condemn whole sections of communities and cultures of a particularly dark hue for undergoing gangster, drug, or dangerous behaviours and scare the more gated community inclined among us to build their fence another foot higher, stimulating the economy through economic purchase. However, Tucker Carlson has recently been cleared of repeated accusations of anti-immigrant and racist comments because, according to US District Judge Mary Kay Viscoll and Tucker's own lawyer, you can't expect to literally believe the words that come out of Carlson's mouth. With Judge Viscoll stating the general tenor of the show should then inform a viewer that Carlson is not stating actual facts about the topics he discusses and is instead engaging in exaggeration and non-literal commentary. Going on to write, Fox persuasively argues that given Mr. Carlson's reputation, any reasonable viewer arrived with an apprehensive amount of skepticism about the statement he makes. Forgetting the most important piece of information that Fox News doesn't have reasonable viewers. It's the number one source of angry uncles across America. And Alex Jones got away with claiming that he was a performance artist so he could maintain shared custody of his kids. The two cases should set the precedent nicely that all this empty bragging is good for sales numbers, but it is not to be taken seriously or as a representation of character for the people they intend to pop a reputational cap in. Tucker Carlson's recent rant on the outrageous choice to make the green M&M less sexy is indicative of the kind of wild fantasy world that people presenting an over-the-top kind of performance can produce in order to create some clout? I'm really not sure. Publicly confessing to wanting to have sex with the green M&M is a sort of clout, but he must feel strongly about it if he dedicated a lot of time to it recently. But you get the idea. And if Tucker Carlson truly doesn't want to fuck a green M&M, then rap lyrics shouldn't remain admissible as evidence in court, as they are artistic expression of braggadocious acts in order to appeal to an audience who wishes that they had the courage it takes to express their secret inner desire for a peeling of the shell of the supple green M&M, but insisting that she keep the boots on before engaging in an awkward, stilted coitus. But then maybe he does want that, and maybe he does mean all the things that he says on his show, in which case everyone goes down, starting with anyone who has ever wrote a crime TV series or a movie, but quickly heading straight to the Rupert Murdoch's house for greenlighting of his opinion hosts. We've got to draw the line somewhere. They either all go down together or none of them go down. Moving on to tennis news now. So by now, we've all seen and heard the drama coming out of the tennis number one seed, Novak Djokovic being more fussy than a five-year-old, asked to eat his vegetables, as he was asked to do the bare minimum in public health and human interaction required by getting a vaccine when he is perfectly capable of doing so. But years and years and years of being a sports star in a world that praises people simply for being quite good at moving their body and expects very little of them has led him to do otherwise. However, with over 2 years of lockdowns, the relationship humans have with activities, including leaving the house and having appreciation for movement and motion, has diminished somewhat as the pandemic enters its second, technically third year, depending on when you start counting from. In fact, all the previous institutions that we've held to be reliable and to be acceptable, so Facebook news, theatrical events, the continued exploitation of the working class through the underpaying and overworking, and public shaming of people in a public sphere so that they'll behave in a semi-acceptable way, all seem to be teetering on the edge of some sort of revolution. Novak, seeing him, seeing his chances for performing his only valuable skill vanish over the horizon, was put into immigration detention in the infamous Park Hotel in Melbourne, where refugees have spent the worst part of 9 years languishing away in a horrid limbo-like existence, which gives new meaning to the term park in Park Hotel, as it no longer refers to the open grass space of the hotel's situation near, but now represents the action of the government with the refugees as they are parked in the hotel until we can send them to America or convince them to go home. Hotel occupants were thrilled to get the celebrity visitor. Normally when people come to town, they go to historically more upbeat locations like Dreamworld or the bins out the back of a restaurant, and they quickly named Djokovic the number one seed in getting released from hotel detention. Which was quickly proven to be true, as Djokovic was released, then quickly put back into detention, which, while disappointing, was still exciting, and frankly, the Park Hotel detainees were just happy to see someone, anyone, actually get out of detention, even if it was via a rotating door. He probably should have just used the regular exit, but if we've learned anything about Djokovic from this whole debacle, it's that he isn't one for doing the simplest activity to keep him from having to go through a lot of unnecessary shit. Upon his return to the Park Hotel, detainees quickly all changed their names to Novak, and in order to confuse the guards who might see it as a Spartacus thing and then let everybody go just in case they missed the wrong one. When that seemed to not work, they organised the first ever inter-detention centre tennis tournament with MITRE to gain the support of Australians and get a chance at being released before their 10 years in detention anniversary. Though the government will be forced to give them all 10 years long service leave and a plaque to hang in their rooms to mark the occasion if they don't get let out. The story has caused quite a stir, with even Seven News reporters Rebecca Madden and Mike Amore having footage of them telling it like it is, quite frankly.
Whatever way you look at it, Novak Djokovic is a lying, sneaky...
He's an arsehole.
Asshole.
He's an arsehole.
Putting many Australians, myself included, in the uncomfortable position of agreeing with Seven News. Though, I am starting to suspect the whole thing was a setup. as 7 News has been beating 9 News in the ratings ever since the footage leaked. Which must be a welcome bump since they wrongly accused the man in the Cleo Smith abduction case and their ratings started to drop. And even Koshy is concerned about what might get out, which means Koshy has been talking some shit. I want you to spill the tea, Koshy. Give us the information that we want. I imagine Koshy and the cash cow are spilling the milk every morning during the ad breaks. This is what we're here for, because we are messy. Put Koshy and the cash cow spilling the milk as the main show. Do it, 7, you cowards. Novak was initially given the all clear to leave immigration detention on January 10th after the Federal Circuit Court overruled a decision to terminate his visa. But Immigration Minister and man who would not hesitate to deport you from the Titanic door after the boat sinks, Alex Hawke, used his personal powers to cancel Djokovic's visa for the second time in the most official case of no taxis backsies in the history of Australia since Terra Nullius. The Immigration and Home Affairs Ministers who administer the Migration Act apparently share 47 personal powers which allow the ministers to cancel visas on character grounds, order the release of those in immigration detention, vary processes, and substitute a more favourable decision than the one handed down at a tribunal, such as the Administrative Appeals Tribunal. A power they have really been withholding as we held people in detention for the last 9 years. The discretionary powers stem from Section 51XIX of the Australian Constitution, which notes the Parliament has the power to make laws with respect to naturalisation and aliens. Which is why you haven't seen any reboot of ALF. He did try to immigrate to Australia some years ago as a refugee running from the first proposal to reboot his show, but he was kept on Christmas Island until he was eventually moved to Minor Detention Centre, where he still resides to this day. Hawke used the powers granted to him under Section 133C of the Migration Act to cancel Djokovic's visa. He said it was in the public interest to do so because the coalition government needed a huge distraction after failing multiple times to get a handle on the pandemic and keep people safe, paid, and healthy. Calling Novak a talisman of anti-vaccination sentiment, which I believe is the next book in the anti-vax young adult adventure series, Jenny McCarthy, which goes Jenny McCarthy and the misrepresented science, then Jenny McCarthy and the Facebook group of secrets, then it's the half-vaxxed prince, and now the talisman. Then going on to say that Novak's presence in Australia might incite civil unrest, which was the perfect means to throw off the news cycle for at least a few days to a week at most. But as much as I can't stand Djokovic's I'm not an anti-vaxxer, anti-vax stance, he's been positioned against Border Force, the force so distrusted they had to create a propaganda show showcasing the hard work that they're doing. And I can't help but notice that nobody makes propaganda shows for firefighters or paramedics. Just making some observations. Just asking questions. I'm expecting this election cycle will come complete with the reality show Scott Morrison, Daggy Dad! Especially after he received a call from Serbian Prime Minister and woman getting a noseful of Australia's shit, Ana Brnabic. And he sought to manage the diplomatic fallout of the overturned visa cancellation by insisting Australia's policies were non-discriminatory. After all, we'd lock anybody up for next to no reason, and if we can claim it is protecting our borders to do so, even better. Which is really why Djokovic should have attempted to come into the country disguised as a French au pair. Dutton would have let him straight in. We'd have had no issues at all. Border Force did find travel declaration anomalies showing Djokovic's positive COVID test, which was the basis for his claimed medical exemption from vaccination. And Der Spiegel reported that the QR code linked to Djokovic's COVID-19 test on the 16th of December, which was published in court documents at times, appeared to return a negative result. Interesting. So even if he wasn't an anti-vaxxer cosplaying just as a man asking questions in a confusing time, he has actively lied to authorities. But why? Why would a sports person be so unreasonable when so many of them have such stellar reputations and are excellent role models? Well, hang on. What's this? Breaking news coming in through the pre-written script and the teleprompter. Well, we better check this out. Djokovic has an 80% stake in Danish biotech firm QuantBioRes, which is developing a COVID drug. He got that way back in June 2020, a full month before it started developing the deactivation mechanism for COVID-19. It may be a coincidence that one of the world's most prominent anti-vax voices is set to make a ton of money should there be a surge in people needing an alternative to the vaccine. But who am I to peddle loosely associated pieces of information? I'm just asking questions. Can't guarantee anything, but maybe if after attending hotel detention, he had come out the other side and spoken on the horrid conditions of the hotel, but also advocated for the release of the refugee detainees, people might have taken your side, Djokovic. Although, even if you had, Morrison would just have doubled down on his approach to refugees, like he did when asked by 2GB presenter and man setting the bar for your butt plug journey, final destination, Ben Fordham. How it was acceptable that refugees in the same hotel as Djokovic had been detained for almost 9 years, with taxpayers spending millions of dollars to keep them in limbo. Morrison, in a classic marketing move, has claimed detainees in the Park Hotel are, in fact, not refugees, saying they have sought asylum and been found not to be refugees, and have chosen to not return. And that happens in this country. People aren't found to be refugees, and they won't return. So now they need to be rebranded. They aren't refugees. What are they? Well, they will now be classified as consciously uncountried persons, as they consciously choose to uncountry. They will need to stay in detention until they decide to re-country with the country that they came from. Simple. But Djokovic isn't taking this lying down. Unlike taking preventative measures to protect his health, he is doing something about his treatment. Reportedly, he is in talks to sue the Australian government, which actually makes him more alike to his previous roommates in hotel detention, as this Kurdish refugee went on to sue the Australian government for unlawful imprisonment and hotel detention. The Sun is reporting that Djokovic is weighing up a $6 million lawsuit. That sum directly includes the prize money that Djokovic could have potentially won had he been allowed to defend his open title, which the winner could have won $2.875 million. The Sun quoted a source close to Djokovic's agent, Edoardo Artlardi, as saying it is well known that Novak and his family feel he was poorly treated in the quarantine hotel in Melbourne. His mum revealed how it was full of fleas and maggots, and he was kept a virtual prisoner. And while he is a proper shithead, who was selfish, greedy, and attempted to see the government, who was uncharacteristically firm on COVID restrictions when they have been close to a completely reckless, let-it-rip approach to being bored and dealing with the pandemic in general. But if a lawsuit leads to starting a legal precedent that putting people in hotel detention is bad and we probably shouldn't do it, then I think I'm all in support for it. He can have money and a non-apology apology, you know, the kind that a government is excellent at delivering. Perhaps the only thing that they are excellent at delivering. And it may lead to speeding along the process for getting these guys out of detention, as it certainly won't happen via any official channels. Especially as migration lawyers have expressed concerns about an admission from the Administrative Appeals Tribunal that it is under-resourced to deal with its backlog of tens of thousands of migration and refugee cases. However, given that the 6 years prior to 2019, 65 of the 333 AAT decision-making members are former Liberal Party staffers, former Liberal or National politicians, party donors, members, unsuccessful Liberal candidates, or Liberal government employees, the vast majority of which are appointed without a transparent selection process, they really should have made it clear they needed a car park. They probably would have gotten the money pretty quickly to sort out all this administrative business. Migration and refugee cases make up approximately 86% of the tribunal's caseload, which also handles appeals on issues ranging from disability support to pensions and unemployment benefits. AAT President David Thomas conceded the tribunal is not sufficiently resourced to substantially reduce its backing cases in its latest annual report released last month. Seems the coalition's new definition of refugee is not a callous message to attempt to stop people from entering the country under the rights to seek asylum, but rather a means to really help lessen the bureaucratic backlog. I mean, I don't know why they aren't leading with this as their election messaging, just letting us know that they are cutting through red tape. We hate delays of red tape, so this sort of thing should really speak to Mr. and Mrs. Australia. Tank news now. Defence Minister and former cop who puts the B in ACAB, Peter Dutton, has committed Australia to spending $3.5 billion on tanks for war. War! What is it good for? Filling the pockets of industries and politicians. Say it again, y'all. We have committed to buying 75 Abrams main battle tanks, 29 assault breacher vehicles, 17 joint assault bridge vehicles, 6 Hercules combat recovery vehicles, and 122 gas turbine engines. All of this is on the heels of the AUKUS security pact. America looked at our contribution to the security pact and thought, well, where are all the superfluous tanks sitting idle to justify the spending of a runaway overblown military budget? Come on, Australia, get your shit together. And frankly, it was just in time, too, as Russia is knocking on the border of the Ukraine, and they have been interested in joining NATO, so we should show some support for this new friend. Although we did offer some help, as Foreign Affairs Minister Maurice Payne asked top security officials to discuss cyber assistance with their Ukrainian counterparts. A key component of our cyber classes will be declaring false DDoS attacks and setting up a website incapable of handling the basic expectations of traffic to that specific site. We are like the judo masters of cyber attacks. By having such a terrible broadband, and we use the enemy's strength against them, it becomes their weakness. Fortunately, Australia has also invested so heavily in military vehicles, which will be ready to roll out in 2025, just in time to fight an army of Boston Dynamics robot dogs that were bought by Putin. I'm sure he's got a bunch of them just sitting around. According to the Sydney Morning Herald, Australia has not deployed a tank in combat since the Vietnam War, and even pro-war army spokespeople have questioned the usefulness of tanks, arguing the government should focus on potential regional maritime and air conflicts, which it can be argued that we have been doing by investing in submarines, then not worrying about those submarines, and investing in other submarines. So we've got our nautical conflicts covered. We've got so many not-submarine submarines coming. Last year, following the AUKUS deal, Dutton announced military spending would rise to $50 billion a year, which wouldn't surprise anyone as we have been gunning to be a major player in the arms business for a while now. Plans, which at the time were attacked as exporting death and profiting from bloodshed, a major change from the traditional means of making money in Australia, exporting slow death and profiting from the baking of the planet. Though former defence industry minister and man demonstrating his feelings on being a warmonger, he is A-OK. Christopher Pyne did commit to not exporting weapons willy-nilly. We couldn't have that. Sparking my great idea for an Australian movie nobody will watch. Willy Nilly and the Gun Factory. Because I got a golden pistol. So that was us being responsible. At the time, Pine said an expanded arms industry could create jobs and investment in Australia, given that the country already had skilled workers, an advanced manufacturing base, and the technological capacity. And certainly, there isn't any other growth industry that is uniquely suited to the Australian climate, like, say, solar power, or a literal growth industry that could benefit people struggling with their mental and physical health, as well as boost the snack economy like marijuana. We could only have gone with guns, obviously. Plus, we don't have a pristine international reputation for gun control, so we wouldn't have to worry about ruining that. Though, selling guns is certainly a good way of keeping them out of Australia, like we do with carbon emissions. We sell coal to other countries, and they become their carbon emissions, while we remain carefree to enjoy the benefits of more tourism to our increasingly warm country. And guys, I know you're all feeling very critical of this whole idea, but rest assured, it will certainly have nothing to do with the former Defence Minister going on to be an advisor to one of the country's biggest beneficiaries of defence contracts, the Brisbane-based NIOA. Less than a month after leaving his federal parliament, because that'd be unethical. And we don't do unethical in this country. So, why are we so committed to the arms industry? First, as an attempt to be a top 10 seller. Then, by becoming the second biggest importer after Saudi Arabia. Well, we have done some analysis, and we have come to an undeniable conclusion. Over the coming years, Australia will spend somewhere between $30 billion and $42 billion on armoured vehicles. This will include a fleet of infantry fighting vehicles, which will likely be announced later this year at a cost of between $18 billion and $27 billion. And possibly as much as $171 billion on submarines, all objects designed to kill. While the Australian government has had a real hard time publicly accepting its role in the climate change saga as one of the largest exporters of coal, Australia has done something quite rare for this country. We have learned from the past. See, there's been some studies that show that Genghis Khan's army had a positive impact on climate change. So we need to build our own army, bigger and more powerful, so that we can also have a positive impact on climate change. But how? I hear you asking. How? I hear you crying out, did Genghis Khan have a positive impact on climate change? Well, like this. His horde killed so many people that whole towns were rewilded. They were destroyed, and trees grew up in their place. Natural plants grew, and it was all going on, which allowed for natural growth to start to absorb CO2 again. So we, as a country, must do our part to counteract our own impact on climate change by blowing up large sections of the world. It's simple. And that is the end. Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for sticking around and listening to another episode of The Barrel of Weird News. I hope you enjoyed that one. If you did, please tell a friend, share it, send it around. I've got a link tree linked to my Twitter account, at Matt Harvey Stuff. So I've got upcoming shows, live shows, as I talked about at the start. My show, Wage Against the Machine, is happening. The links to that is on my link tree. It's linktree.com/MattHarveyStuff. In case you don't want to go to Twitter and look that up. And there you'll find a link to, if you want to support the show directly, if you want to just give money to the show, we're accepting donations via my link tree, and you can set up any amount that you like. I'm pretty sure you can set up any amount that you like. It might prompt you for $5, but I did tell it that it can give any amount. We currently aren't accepting recurring donations. Maybe that's something we'll do in the past. If people are interested in doing that. Otherwise, if you want to support the show, share it around, give us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. Yeah, give us a great 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. tell your friends, and come to the shows. Come to the live shows. As always, the best way to support this show is to come to my live shows. Stay safe, everyone. Look after yourselves. And get your vaccines. Get your boosters. See you out there. Have fun.